Accession number 10168, reel number 1.
Mr. Donald Price, reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Price?
Well, I was born actually in Bury in South Wales. The date was March the 4th, 1898. And I had quite a happy childhood, you know. Bally was on the coast as far as, you know, if you remember. And I really enjoyed my childhood up to about the age of 8. I mean, I swam and things like that in the sea, and it was a lovely country there, and we used to go, the kids and I used to go around from school and go in the woods and things. And I had quite a lovely idea about nature. I used to love going in the woods and messing about. And that was really till about the age of 8.
What did your father and mother do?
Well, father was, at that time, Dad was, he was a customs officer. In Bury. Bury was quite a new place in those days. The dock had been built, and father was the customs officer attached to the docks. And very often he used to take me down walking with him on the ships and things like that, and I used to go on the orange ships and on the banana ships, and father used to have a long walking stick, and in the walking stick was a sword. And I remember Dad and I on the deck once, I must have been quite, well, probably 6, 7, and he was stabbing these sacks with this sword to see if there was any contraband, I suppose, in these sacks. And then, of course, I was at school. I was quite a good footballer at 8. Quite a good footballer. We used to play at school, of course, and things like that. And I only went to I was at the infant school for a start, then I went to the bigger school. And I think the school, when I was about 8... I left Bury. Father was promoted, I suppose he called it promotion, and he was promoted to Partington Basin, which was on the canal, and Cadishead was a little village attached, and we lived in this place called Cadishead. And I was still a boy then, 8 and 9, and I still went with Dad on these various odd ships and on the canal, and I had a really happy life with my dad.
Did you miss the countryside? You said you liked.
Yes. Well, the Cadishead was more. You see, it was inland, and it was in an industrial country. So, as far as country life to me, was negligible in relation to what I had at Bury, and All my childhood up there was school, going to school and coming home again. And my sister, who was she'd been educated in the university at Cardiff, and the school that I should have gone in Cadishead was a church school, and my sister wasn't happy about that. And she wanted better education for me because I suppose she'd been educated and my eldest brother had been educated, and they wanted to see me in a better school. So I actually applied a place called Urmston, higher grade. And I got a scholarship then, which meant that I'd got free education in the school itself, and also I got my train fare because Urmston was about 5 or 6 miles from Cadishead, and I continued. I had a scholarship there, and I had a scholarship every year, which meant that I had free education in that school, which is the higher grade school in Urmston, and I'd got my train fare. It wasn't very much, but it was something. It helped Dad out, you see. It helped my mother out.
What kind of education were you getting then?
Well, I felt I was getting really good education. I was always the top of my form, always. When the certificates came out, my mother was always pleased to see the reports. We used to have reports in those days. Each individual had a report from the headmaster yearly, and I was always at the top of my form, always. I was really quite good at most things.
What subjects were you taught?
Well, we had, we used to go for arithmetic and geometry, Euclid, French, very little French, by the way, but English, history, geography, all those subjects. Over the years, I became quite good, really. And, of course, there was the sort of religious thing as well. I had a very lovely voice, and I used to sing at the school choir and things like that. And I was a bit of a little actor, and I used to act at school, you know, Julius Caesar and all that kind of nonsense. And my life progressed from there. Just age. I went up the same school, say, from 8 right away till 15 when I left school.
Were you involved in any of the outside boys' organisations? I'm thinking, for instance, of the Boy Scouts, the Church Lads.
No, in my day, I don't remember any boys' groups like Scouts. The only thing I remember really was the football. We had a football team, and we used to visit various odd teams about our own ages. It was quite a little sort of league round. Ermston there, or we boys, say 10, 12, we used to play football. But apart from that, I don't remember at night, you see, when we got home, there was nothing as far as I remember, only going to a church or for a concert. I don't remember anything else until later on there's some the cinema came, which was a little cockeyed show in a little barn. But there was no suggestion of boys' clubs or anything like that, as far as I remember. I mean, the only meeting that the children had was in the church. Sunday afternoon, or what we call it, you know, prayer meeting and things like that. Little sing-songs at night.
Which religion was it then?
No, my father and mother were fairly, very, very religious. My mother was very religious, and actually I was in the choir, and I used to go to church 3 times a day. We had the church in the morning, and then, of course, I had my afternoons, children, and then I went at night, I was at church again, because I was in the choir.
Which denomination, though?
Church of England. I was in the choir. And I was the leader of the choir, actually. And if I remember rightly, I always think that I really should have been in the Manchester Cathedral Choir. But at that time, I feel it somehow that my people couldn't afford it for me to go in on the train to Sunday, you know, to the cathedral every Sunday, and consequently I never went in. Although I think my voice at that time, as a little boy, was quite good.
Was money very tight for the family? Or?
Well, my father, he was a customs officer, and he was only a customs officer, and I think, as far as I know, I don't think he ever got more than £2 a week in those days. See, which was quite a sum. And we lived in a house, and we moved when we were in that village from one house to another, which to us was quite a something, to move from one house to a little bigger house, you see. And so we stayed there for, well, till I came in the army, actually, till I left.
Now, at 15, could you tell me the background, how you came to leave school and what happened
there? Well,
your
actually,
father died.
My father had died. He died in, I think, if I remember rightly, say 1913. I was still at school when he died. And, of course, my mother was a widow then. And we had the family, my two brothers and two sisters. And I know Arthur, the brother next to me, mother said to us one day, look, you got to go into Manchester and draw my father's pension, whatever it may be. And we actually, my brother and I called at this place in Manchester and we collected £100 in gold. To us it was an enormous amount of money. And we took it home, and that was my father's gratuity, I suppose. I suppose in those days my mother could have voted for a pension or this lump sum. And I suppose she wanted this lump sum, and we had this lump sum of £100, which we thought was a colossal amount of money. When mother saw this money, she was amazed, actually. It was all in gold, and immediately she put about £20 aside to buy a wardrobe. And I remember she actually went to Liverpool to buy this wardrobe because one of the things she wanted in those days. And this wardrobe, I mean, I don't know how much it cost, but I know she took about £30 away from that lot. And then the money that was left, I suppose, helped to keep me at various and clothing, things like that, you see, because we were very poor. I said, when Dad had gone, my eldest brother, Harold, he was teaching then. And I'd got a sister who was teaching in Barry, and I suppose those two subsidised the family and kept us going. And of course it wasn't long after Dad died, that they decided that I had got to go into the university or go through the university. And I said I didn't want to. I wanted to go into industry. And
why was that?
Pardon?
Why was that?
No reason whatever. Only I felt that I might have made a lot more money in industry than being a teacher. The only idea I'd got of university, of the profession, was teaching. And that was, of course, the family. My brother and sister, they were both teachers. And then they decided what they're going to do with me. So my brother, who looked after me then, the brother next to me, Arthur, he decided that we better see what we could do for Donald about this school. I was still at this Ermston school. And so he came to see the headmaster with my sister. And the headmaster decided that he got one or two people coming round looking for good boys to go into industry. And a fellow named Ernie Bone, I remember it quite well. Ernie Bone, he must have been probably 23, 24, but he was a man to me. And he came to the school and he said to our headmaster that the firm of Brookfield Aitchison had room for some apprentices. And although we were very, very poor at home, my mother decided that would be all right for me. In other words, I was going to have £100 in 5 years. So I stood at 2 shillings and a penny a week. And we'd got to find the train fare from Cadishead to Manchester. Which did away with that 2 shillings a week. And I had a really good life on that lot, because my brother and sister were sort of supporting me. And I played football, I mixed in the village, and still sang in the choir. And I was in business. I used to go to train. I used to go on the train every day to Manchester.
Well, now, you were an apprentice in wholesale textiles.
Wholesale textiles,
what
yes.
Exactly did you have to do? What
well,
was your
job? Well, I went there. I said to... I was very interested in getting into the cotton business. And I didn't know anything about business whatever, and I wanted to get into the cotton business because that was a Lancashire thing, big, we thought. And I thought by going into this place, it was cotton. But when I got there, most of my amazement, the governor came to me and, oh, he said, you're in that department. Well, I didn't know much about, and I was actually put in the fur department, selling furs and looking at the fur trade. And I kept in this fur trade for, well, until I went in the army for about two years, actually.
What exactly did you have to do? What was your daily sort of duties?
Well, I went in and actually what we got to do, of course, furs in those days, furs themselves, was a terrific business because every lady in those days had a fur necklace or a fur coat or something. It was a, what shall I say, part of your life. You were judged by the quality of fur you had on, you see. And we had to sell them. And I had to, I mean, we got orders from various art groups around the country where we were, and I used to have to pick all these furs out, foxes and all kinds of skunks and everything else, and get them ready and send them out to these various odd people, the businesses that wanted them. We were all in bulk, you know. And I was quite, I became quite, quite expert in the fur game. And I was with them. I got the neck, see, I was 5 pounds of fur, and then I got on 10 pounds, which was 4 and a penny a week. And I was on the 4 and a penny a week when I left to go in the army.
Before we get to that, did you used to follow the foreign affairs situation? Were you aware of the approach of war in 1913-14?
No, it wasn't thought of. I didn't think of it anyhow. It wasn't till what happened is a chap in my department called Blythe, and he was the a member of the yeomanry, which was a volunteer thing in those days. And he came down once in August, I think it was. He came to the place in his uniform. He was in the cavalry. Duke of Lancaster's own yeomanry, that was it. And Blythe was a member, and I think I got a bit of a smack, you know, get an idea then that there was, you know, it looked nice and, you know, I'd like to be in the cavalry or in the wars. And then, of course, got nearer and nearer. The war got nearer and nearer from that date when he came in, because I suppose he went on holidays in those days to get a bit of training, which they did, you see. These volunteers, they went into these various egg camps for a fortnight just to train, as you know. And I think it was during one of those periods he came into the warehouse in his uniform. And then that was in the, say, in the August, and the war had started, you know, then.
And do you remember the day war broke out at all?
Oh, God, yes. I remember distinct. I went up with my sister and brother, and it was one of the first holidays I'd ever had, and we went to Keswick. And we had a very nice time, you know. There are no motor cars or anything like it in those days. And I remember going around in these brakes, you know, what we call brakes, and going around, sitting on the brakes and going around looking at things. And eventually war broke out. And the idea was, I think a newspaper or something, it said you better get back. There was mobilization, that was it. And we went, I remember going to this station. We had to go to, I think from Keswick, we got to go on a sideline to Lancaster. I think it was something like that. And from there, all these people, all these soldiers congregated, all called up, all in uniforms, and not in uniforms, and they were on the same train with me, and they came down to Manchester. And that was the first day, or so the second day, the war broke out. And, I remember quite so well.
How did you feel when war broke out?
Excited, exhilarated. had no idea, really, that for a moment that I was going to get so excited that I wanted to join the thing. But I certainly did eventually join, as you know. Mm.
Did you know what sort of war it would be, or did you think
no,
it would be over
no
quickly?
No idea. The only thing that everybody thought about was about the terrible Germans, because the stories are getting about with cruelties and all that kind of business in those days. And the Uhlans, these cavalry, we used to think they were terrible people. And I think stories like that built up in my mind, and eventually decided I'd like to sort of do something for my country.
So did you believe the stories? But this is the when they were in Belgium.
Oh, no question. We all did. And the funny thing that another thing that that happened a bit later on. I was in our kitchen, and we had a railway line going past us where the trains used to go, and we could see these trains. And we actually thought that those were Russians coming through with snow on their boots. That's true. I absolutely firmly believed it.
What made you think that, though?
Everybody thought that those Russians, that the people going in that train, that were Russians, and they got snow on their boots, and they were going to help us.
How did the rumor start?
God knows how it started,
but
it went through. It went through England like wildfire, you know. That period when the Russians had come and they got snow on their boots. I firmly believed it, and I was an educated boy in those days.
So you'd see trains go past.
Saw the train you passed us going from Warrington, say, to Manchester, you see.
And you'd think there were troops, Russian troops on there.
Russians? The Russian troops come to help us, you see. Yes, well, that's. That's how it was. And then, of course, it built up in my mind that I wanted to get in, and I went back to business. And as I think I told you that...
What about the British propaganda, so to speak, the posters and things like that? Did you see any of them before you...
Well, of course, it wasn't long before Kitchener, with the great hoarding and I want you... You know, the Kitchener. Well, that was the great thing I remember. And, of course, the propaganda too. There was no radio. There was no television, as you know. And all this was done by hearsay or by newspapers. And we had the Daily Dispatch was the paper in Manchester in those days. And we had it at home. We used to have a Daily Dispatch every day. And we believed that intrinsically. As far as I was concerned, the Daily Dispatch was truth. And what they said about the Germans and us, or the French, to me, it was gospel. There was no question about questioning any newspaper article.
Did the Kitchener Poster have an impact on your... I mean, did it work?
I don't know. I don't think that worked on me. I think it was the general feeling of the country, say, around my friends, that influenced me.
You were very patriotic then?
Oh, very. And Jimmy Rushworth, a chap named Jimmy Rushworth, he was an apprentice with me, tall lad. We were talking one morning in the warehouse, and he says, well, what are you going to do, Don? He said, I'm going down to enlist. I said, right, Jimmy, I'll come with you. And we went down to a hotel in Piccadilly, Manchester. To join, without any second thought about anything, it was just straight away. Jimmy said, "I'm going down." I said, "I'll come with you." There was no thought about the consequences or anything. We were going in the army, and we thought it's going to be a damn good. We're going to have a good time for about 6 months, and then it'll all be over, and we'd have seen the war. We'd have had sort of holiday. I think we were bored really with our work. In those days, it was so tedious, and I think a lot of people really were like that. They sort of wanted some bit of fun, excitement, and I think this was a way they could probably get it.
Now, this was the 29th of December 1914.
December 1914, yes.
that you'd not heard anything about the fighting at the front that would make you think a less romantic picture of the war?
Not a bit. You see, there was nothing in those days. Don't forget this, that those days of Mons were very, very, very little stuff, very small stuff in relation to what came, like Ypres or the Somme or anything like that. I mean, as far as the Uhlans came, we had so many people at Mons, you see. Very, very negligible part of the army. But it was the whole of the army, but it was very, very small. And that business was Mons. It was only at Mons. It didn't stretch down France and down like it did eventually. The whole of France, the whole of the line. It happened to be in Belgium. And it didn't affect me one way about it. Atrocities and things like that.
What about white feathers? Had you seen anything
about
that?
Oh, I'd seen one or two of them. Oh, yes, and these girls, you know, and of course, nice looking, I'm not saying that, but I was a nice tall lad, you know, and things like that. And I never had one put into me, but I saw them given. Two fellas, these smart kids, you know, these girls knocking about, sticking this and that. And it was a very terrible thing, you know, really.
Did you approve of it at the time?
I don't think I bothered one iota. As far as I was concerned, I was going in, and you can give me as many white feathers as you like, but I'm going in, you know. And it didn't affect me. Nothing would stop me. Nothing would make me go, only my own mind.
Did you talk it over with your mother or with
Never
your brothers?
Never had one moment with my mother or my brother. Nobody had any idea. I had no idea when I went out in the morning what I was going to do by lunchtime. I had no idea. The point was, I came home at night and I said, Mother, I'm in the army. Just like that. I'd got down with Jimmy Rush to this place on the in the hotel on Piccadilly, Manchester. And we went in. I was a boy. I was only 16 at the time. And Jimmy was only 16. And we went in this room with staff sergeant.
Was there a queue? Was it popular at the time?
Oh, yes. There weren't many. It's lunchtime. There weren't many. We sort of dodged in. And I think is this a hotel I'm talking about? As far as I remember, it was a hotel or a pub. And there was a big room there, and there were two rooms. You went in there, and the staff sergeant had got a table there with all papers on, and then you went through, and there was the doctor who was examining people. And first you went in, and you said your piece to the sergeant, and then you shoved through the room into the doctor. And it has, when I went in, I was wearing glasses. And I felt that I was not going to be accepted if he started testing my sight. And unfortunately, the doctor went out of the room. And I saw this thing on the wall, this eye test, you know, that thing you learn. And I learned the bottom lines of it. And he said to me, you can't see that. And I said, I'm sorry, sir, but I can. He says, all right, off you go. And I went out of that door, and the sergeant got hold of him, and he said, sign on here, sign this paper. And I signed the paper, and he gave me a shilling, and I was in the army. And it was just like that. There was no sort of examination, as far as I know. You had volunteered. There's your shilling. Sign on, you're in the army.
Did none of them ask you or a hint about your age?
Nothing whatever. You see, they asked you, how old are you, when you went in? And I think I said 18 or 19, whatever it was. But it was 18, I think, in those days. Eventually became 19. The conscription became 19 later on in the war. But I said I was 18, which was the right thing to do. There was nobody questioned me. And I never questioned Jimmy.
How do you think you passed as 18? Because you were only 16.
I was a big boy. I was a big lad. That I think, you see, they were getting so hard up then, you know. They wanted people. And I suppose they're all right. You go in and you pass this thing, you pass this stage. The next stage will kick you out if they don't want you. That, I think, was the idea. And we were in the army. I was in the army. And the next stage was really I'd be examined by the army.
I'll come to that, yeah. Mm. Did you know anything about the army at all? Did you know what you were joining?
I had no idea whatever. As far as I was concerned, I was going to fight for my country. How I was going to fight for them, God knows. I didn't know the difference between artillery or ASC or infantry. Cavalry, I had no idea. And eventually...
What had you in actual fact joined at this recruiting office? Whose recruiting office was it?
I've no idea. If the recruiting... A recruiting office, a government recruiting office. They weren't recruiting for a regiment or anything like that, as far as I remember, because Jimmy, who came in with me, eventually got his papers, and eventually he was in the artillery. So he couldn't have been the centre for a certain regiment.
Did they ask you at all which unit you wanted to join?
No, there was no question. I didn't know anything about units. As far as I was concerned, I was in the army, and that was that.
So they're giving you the king's shilling. What happened then?
Well, I went home, and then I went home, and I told my mother that I'd joined the army. Of course, there was weeping and wailing, of course, because she wasn't very happy about it. I'd got my two brothers were there, admittedly, but she didn't feel that she'd like her youngest son going into this. But when I explained to her that I was only there for about 6 months, of course, it calmed down somewhat. And the next thing that happened, I got an envelope